This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Across Australia, on the Community Radio Network, to over 70 community radio stations around the nation. This is Word for Word, coming to you from Australia's first gay and lesbian radio station, Melbourne's Joy 94.9.
Hello and welcome to Word for Word. Dean Beck and Joy Etwell with you today. It seems that nearly every day of the week, another International Day of this or National Awareness Day of that, well, these events seem to pass us by, barely noticed sometimes. But one very special day connected to the collective conscience of all Australians way back in 1988. Some ideas are so simple you wonder why you didn't think of it yourself, and there are some issues that are so important you simply cannot ignore them. So when the issue combines with the idea and it is so well executed, the increased awareness is transformative and everlasting. Now there is no better example of a national day of than Red Nose Day. From a marketing perspective, Red Nose Day has a 94% recognition rate. But it is the difference that Red Nose Day has made in the lives of so many families that will remain its legacy.
And I'd like to welcome to our studio on Word for Word, Jill Green, the Manager, Health Promotion and Community Education, and Leanne Fink, who lost her son Alexander to SIDS at 11 weeks in 2002. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you very much for having us here.
Thank you.
It is one of those things that at first, it really wasn't taken seriously, sudden infant death syndrome. It was almost like this intangible something that seemed to be happening with greater regularity in particularly Australian children. Is it an international phenomenon?
Absolutely. It more so Western phenomenon,
right.
Which came, the history of it was, and why Red Nose Day came about was Karine Fitzgerald in Victoria was a mum back in the 70s. She had a couple of children. She had a little boy, and her little boy, Glenn, died. And the next day she thought, why are these little ones dying of this thing called cot death or SIDS? And who's going to support me? What support group is out there? And there was nothing. And she was a lady, she was a hairdresser, she was a very, you knew when she came into a room, and quite often she had a champagne glass in her hand as well. She made things happen.
Yeah.
And she actually ended up standing in front of the World Health Organization and said, why are so many babies dying of SIDS?
What were you writing it off as? What was the deal?
Cot death. It's always been there. Overlaying was something that's been written in the Bible historically. But there was a rise in the 50s, the 50s up to the 80s, until she fought for research to come together. She fought for it to be a priority with the World Health Organization. And she fought for changes. And she fought for people to be aware. And that's where the Red Nose came into it. Everybody has to be a bit aware about this.
So is she still part of the organization?
Karine died a few years ago, and that was very sad, but we remember her all the time. She's just such a focal point of the organisation internationally.
Nothing could be more ridiculous than sticking a red nose on your face.
No.
And yet it worked.
It did work.
Wow.
It did work, and it's been an amazing success. In figure-wise, before we began the health promotion program back in 1989, in Australia, 513 little ones were dying of this thing called sudden infant death syndrome or cot death. Up to now, just in Victoria, there's been a 90% reduction in the number of little ones dying from SIDS.
It's extraordinary.
Absolutely. Just by changing their infant care practice. And that's all evidence-based. So there's a lot of research that went on over many, many years. And that's huge. It's around about 83% in Australia. So we're doing well. But just think about it. We have 72,000 approx parents coming through each year. Each year, a new generation.
72,000?
72,000. Just in Victoria, new little ones being born. So we need to keep at it, to keep at it. And we are seeing the numbers going up a little bit. So we cannot become complacent with our education.
So have they ever discovered what actually causes it? Because you said that they change their practices, but do we know?
That's where we're still, and that's another thing that SIDS and Kids do. We fund for research, and there's a lot of research going on still. We still actually don't know the actual cause, the causative factor.
That's the bit that I guess so many people are struggling to come to terms with. How can we have a multi-million dollar campaign that is making a difference, and we still really don't know what's going on.
Absolutely, and what's making one vulnerable infant, and we hear so often from especially grandparents, but I slept my babies on the tummy. You would have all been slept on the tummy. Yes. My baby was fine, so why is this little one not okay? Why is this one fine in a smoking household, but this one's not? And that's why we need to find that causative factor. And it's like, if you can imagine, three circles, and the little one that dies from SIDS is the little one in the middle. And there has to be at least one factor from those three circles that come together like the spokes of the wheel. We know the infant factors. They're the infant's under 12 months. The peak age is between 2 and 4 months of age, maybe 5 months. Little preemies are more vulnerable, low birth weight, etc. That's one of the circles. The other circle, we know a lot, evidence-based research has showed us that tummy sleeping, smoking, side sleeping, head covering, all those bits and pieces.
Hang on,
are
tummy sleeping, side sleeping, what's left?
They're risk.
Back.
Back is the place to go. Okay. All little babies should be slept on their back from birth up until the age where they can roll over and roll back again, etc.
And that's a developmental phase that naturally progresses, I guess.
Absolutely, and you have to change with that.
The third circle.
The third circle is, what is the cause?
Uh-huh.
So we don't know. Because we don't know, we can't do anything about that circle. The only circle we can work with is those risk factors.
Leanne, your son Alexander passed away at 11 weeks, right in the middle of this particular vulnerable period. Mm-hmm. That's got to be devastating.
Oh, absolutely. Life-changing. But
because you have a healthy son, good as gold.
Oh, yep. He was, 90 percentile in all his milestones, hadn't been ill, just woke up on New Year's morning to find that he'd passed away.
Oh,
so,
happy New Year.
What an awful day. If it's got to happen, I mean, what a shocking day.
So that was 2002. So we're coming up for 10 years, and I guess I still can't bring myself to say Happy New Year to people.
Yeah.
But
What brings you to this realm now? I mean, why are you here today? Uh-huh. Sharing this experience with us, because
it's got
to be tough.
Yeah, very tough. And I guess there's lots of different reasons. One is that SIDS and Kids were fantastic to me and to my husband George and to my family in supporting us through what was an awful tragedy and helping us to re-engage with life. And so it's partly to give back to what they've given to us and to help with community awareness and also something special for Alex.
Leanne. It's his memory.
Yeah, it's in memory of Alex. And I guess when something awful happens, I mean, we've all seen the book, when awful things happen to good people, and when something like that does happen, that you do try and make some sense of it. And
I've
guess
got a feeling, though, that there must have been some thing within you that was just, what did I do wrong?
Oh, absolutely.
And that's got to be heartbreaking.
Absolutely. As any parent, I guess, knows that this gorgeous bundle's been entrusted to us and is totally dependent on us. So, when a child dies, there's an insurmountable amount of blame and guilt and what if only, and, what could I have done differently? Am I a bad parent? Am I a bad person? All of those sorts of things.
I think it's the ultimate tragedy, not only is your little one taken away from you. Your heart is raw forever.
Yeah.
Mm. And it's the guilt, the blame, and your dreams are taken away.
Mm.
Whenever you start a new life, you think not only what they're going to be at this age when they're in your arms, but what are they going to be doing running around hitting a balloon, going to school for the first time, their 21st, et cetera, et cetera.
It's one of those extraordinary examples of how a life cut so short is, it kind of only impacts the immediate family. I mean, a 21-year-old by that time has developed these larger circles that it impacts. But that insulation of affecting that family, I can't imagine what it's like.
Well, they say with the death of just one child, between 60 and 80 people average are affected by that death. Yeah. You have the mum, the dad, the children,
the
close family, the grandparents, especially for grandparents. It's almost like a double-sided grief. They're grieving for their own child who they can see and they can't fix it. And they're grieving for the loss of their grandchild as well.
And they always say that it's the worst thing to die before your child, but if it's your grandchild.
It's unnatural. But Citizen Kids actually, when the organisation started, it was to look after families, to support families and their families, their community, where there had been a death from SIDS. But because of the numbers have dropped, we've been able to do that. We've actually expanded our service that we support families where there's been a sudden unexpected death. So that's what a lot of people don't realise.
Just in general.
Yeah. Right. Yes, sudden and unexpected. So it's from 20 weeks gestation up to, in metro area, up to 6 years of age. And in the Geelong and Ballarat region, we've been able to, with a bit of funding, being able to get a counsellor up there to support up to the age of 18. So when you think of that, how many sudden unexpected deaths are there of infants and children?
And there's particularly many. In regional cities and towns, that youth suicide rate is still far too high.
It's high.
Far too high.
So do you deal with suicides? Is that
In the country regions, absolutely. Yeah. In the Geelong and in the Ballarat region, it is up to 18. Not in the metro. We're actually a very small organisation. I think in our Melbourne office we have maybe 25. I think I'd have to count on my fingers now. But it's actually a very small organisation. Our counsellors are amazing, though. They'll work night, they'll work weekends. Yep. They go, if there's a death up in Mildura or down in Gippsland, they'll go. It's so important that we have that contact face-to-face, and that's very rare in a lot of
So they become, I guess, case-managed by the
if they want, counselor. There's a lot of things they can have. They can have they can speak to a counsellor. They can speak to, we train parent supporters. So parents like Leanne, who are down track, go through a training process. And a lot of parents want to walk alongside other parents to give them a sense of hope.
Does that help you, Leanne, being able to share it?
Absolutely. I think probably I started as a parent supporter about 2 years after Alex died. And I think probably the greatest part of my healing has actually come through being a parent supporter and helping other parents go through that as well.
There's that silly little thing that we attach to it being, I guess, not all at waste.
Yes, and that's a big thing for
being
me.
Being able to give back.
Absolutely. Yeah. And to do it in Alex's memory and to make this horrible thing that happened to us mean something.
Sure.
So it's given us that opportunity to do that.
And I think sometimes as a parent you think that when your child has died, I'm never going to be able to smile again.
Yeah.
The dad, I'm never going to be able to. I remember when our little girl died 15 years ago, my husband found it very hard to go back to work. Nobody mentioned why he had been away for the last couple of weeks.
Wow.
And that's quite a general thing that occurs out there, whereas we see each other, we get support. I can see my parents' supporter. I can remember saying, you're smiling. Do you mean one day I'm going to be able to smile again? And that sense of hope for any family is so important.
Yeah.
And you touched on the thing about dads too. We would naturally have an empathy for the mother. That doesn't always translate to the father, sadly.
No.
I don't know but it doesn't.
I think quite often, you know, and men say this, they say, well, you know, they're always saying, well, how's so-and-so? But nobody actually asked how I am. And you're expected, they feel that they're expected to go back to work. You know?
So do you have male supporters for the men?
Yes.
And there are father nights as well, support groups that are run by SIDS, that where fathers can go and just talk about things.
Have a beer and
yeah. And they do have a beer and have a general chat.
Well, that's what
and
you imagine men would do, want to do, isn't it?
And they also probably around about 7 years ago, we tried to do activity-based things. It's very hard to get men to come and sit down and say, how are you today? Yeah. So what seems to have worked well is we have fishing trips. Yeah. And there's a waiting list
to go
on the boat.
Absolutely,
because I don't know how they do it, though. They have donuts afterwards, which to me just doesn't go with a seasick tummy. But it's getting together with people who are similar to you at that time.
And my husband's been on the fishing trips, and I asked, you know, because you know what women are like, they love to chat. I said, so what do you talk about? And he says, oh, actually, we don't talk all that much about it, but we all know that we're in the same boat, pardon the pun. But, yeah, they all know that they're there and that they have that in common. So they
typical
get
bloody men.
Absolutely.
They're there for the one reason that they still don't talk about, but the fact that they are there makes it all fine.
And they have comfort in that.
Yeah, I know they do. It's mental. Yeah. It is mental.
And I think it's very hard for the children too, the siblings, because it's the first time they've ever seen their parents totally out of emotional control. You know, and
totally
and that's
vulnerable.
Totally vulnerable. So we run children's programs and we support children, adolescents in different groups as well. And I think that's really important that we not just look after the parents but their whole community, because that's where we want them to be able to go to in the end, to be supported by their own community.
Because I imagine if you have a 3 or 4 year old that of course idolises the parents and the new baby comes along and then is lost through SIDS, that total emotional breakdown of the parents at such a vulnerable age of the other siblings has got to have an impact.
Absolutely. And I think it's even, do you remember those times when the first couple of days when people came with casseroles and flowers and you're just in shock mode and you lose the feeling of where your family are going and you have to bring them back in together, don't you? And sometimes you need the help of somebody to support you to say it's time to bring the family together, to give them time, your time.
We're speaking with Jill Green, Manager and Health Promotions and Community Education Officer for SIDS, Sudden Infant Death Syndrome. And we're talking about Red Nose Day, which is on Friday the 24th of June. Leanne Fink is also with her and sharing her experience with SIDS. Here with Dean Beck and Joy Atwell across Australia on the Community Radio Network. Jill, the organisation seems to do quite a lot and have quite a large profile, but with no government funding, I believe.
We get less than 1% government funding at this stage, but if anybody's listening out there, the doors would love them to open. But we do a lot with that amount. Red Nose Day we rely on, in Victoria, raffles as well. And it's getting harder because there's so many other days in a year now. We've got, and I won't mention them, but it makes it very, very hard. And I do believe that one, people don't know the extent of what SIDS and Kids do, the extent of our service. And two, because the numbers of little ones dying from SIDS have gone down, they think that it's fixed, and it's not.
That it's no longer a problem.
No. So it's something that has to keep going on. But also, if you look at the stillbirths haven't gone down in many years. We need a public health campaign to try and prevent these stillbirths. And that's where a lot of the money to research is going as well. So
And that's not about laying on your back.
It's not. And further research needs to allow us to find out why are these little ones getting to such a late stage in pregnancy and then not making it. And many of the stillbirths, a third of our stillbirths, are actually unexplained, meaning we don't know why that little one wasn't born alive.
With IVF and the ever-increasing availability of that, there's kind of an expected some collateral damage with IVF that, there are greater chances of potentially losing a child. That doesn't make it any easier for the individuals concerned.
I don't think so at all, no. I think it's your dreams that you want to have a baby. That's what you're working for, no matter whether you're doing it through IVF, whether you're doing it through adoption, whether you're doing it
By natural means.
By natural means, and we won't go into that one. But it's you want. That's what you want to be. You want to be a parent.
Leanne, Alexander was your first child.
Yes, he was, yeah, and he passed away at 11 weeks.
You've since had other children?
I have since had three gorgeous girls.
Right.
And, yeah, okay. And SIDS, again, were tremendous in helping me through the apprehension and anxieties that I obviously had that are attached to having subsequent children. It's fair to say that they are the most poked and prodded children in Melbourne. But, yeah, absolutely. Every time, you know, they'd sleep in their pram and, and they get a funny...
What, wake up?
Exactly. Oh, and I'd be having my hand on their belly to make sure it was still rising and falling. There are support groups that SIDS run called Subsequent Pregnancies, and also there's support groups for people. I guess I had a ruptured ectopic pregnancy as well, but there's also groups where people are trying to have subsequent children and perhaps it's not working for them as well, and SIDS also support them through that as well.
Do your girls have a connection to Alex?
Absolutely, they do. And he's very much spoken about in our house. And
it's pretty important, I would imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. And we have lots of symbols that represent him in the house as well. And one of the things that we did through SIDS as well was a creative memories. So they do lots of art and expression for dealing with grief as well. And funny you mentioned, do they have a connection with him? Because what we did was we did it with his photos. So they run it, you know, even from babies, they ran around with that. Wonderful. So,
yeah. So on his a birthday, mm-hmm. What do you do then? What
special? We're the table at the restaurant singing happy birthday to somebody who isn't there. Yeah. So we do celebrate it for everyone's different. Every journey's different. His anniversary, everyone knows I go under the doona. Right. So that's just a day that's, I'm off the radar. As I said, it's New Year's Day, so I'm under the doona and we do different family things, burn candles, do things in his memory. And then his birthday has been something of a celebration. That's just how we've treated it. He gets a present that the girls obviously open and enjoy, and we all play and we go out for a family outing and usually dinner.
That's great.
It is great.
And I think it's sometimes when you talk to, my background is also nursing, and when you talk to older women, men, and they'll ask you, how many children do you have? Mm. And it's quite easy to think, I'm not going to hurt the person I'm talking to, so I won't say that little one. I won't include that one. But we encourage parents to say, how many you actually have. So in my family, I have five, and our little girl is included in that. But talking to some older people, they'll say, I was never allowed to include that little one.
In fact, some
we
never
were told
knew.
To go away and forget it. Mm. Yeah.
You were telling me during the break that some stillbirths would be removed at the point of birth. That's and right. The mother would have no connection to the child and end up not knowing what happened to the child. It's extraordinary.
And very sad, very sad. How can you get on with your life when that piece of your heart has been taken away forever? And they've been told, just go and have another child, replace it with that one. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't happen. No matter how many other children you have, it never replaces that little one that you died. So we may have people who are 80, 75 giving us a call.
Wow. Leanne, are your parents still alive?
Yes, they are.
And your husband's parents?
Yes.
And so how do you involve them in this? Or do they want to be involved? Or?
They do. I guess some of it we still sort of, I guess the pain is always there and it's at times private and we grieve as a small unit, and then other times it's wider and we do things. So, for instance, one of the things we do to remember Alex on Christmas Day is that we buy a candle and we have a whole host of different stick-on stickers and pins and ribbons and things, and then each family member goes and chooses something from that box and then puts it on the candle as a representation of you know, their memory of Alex or what Alex meant to them, or and then we burn it for on Christmas Day and through to New Year's Day, which is obviously the time that's sort of most poignant for us.
It seems that, that what I'm hearing is ritual is really important in this whole grieving process and ongoing for years. To have your rituals is really quite healing. And
I think it's extremely important, but it's also, grief is unique. So whatever we do, however we feel in our grief, it's okay to go that way. We don't, there's no normality, there's no normal way to do it. So we encourage parents and their families to listen to each other so that you complement, but also you've got choices, and you've got choices all the way along. And we have a series of booklets we give to families, grandparents and the friends, especially at those early stages too, when you need to think about things such as a funeral. You know, you've never thought about organising a funeral for your own child, so how am I going to do that?
You're too busy buying nappies.
Absolutely, yes, or trying to get a good night's sleep, and which we don't want anymore.
And at that time, you're just numb, you're just in shock, you know, and physical pain.
Yes.
I remember the early days being physical pain. I now know where the saying to die from a broken heart came from, because whenever I thought of Alex, I just got the most excruciating pain in my heart and in my stomach.
What do you feel now?
I still feel sadness and loss and that I've been cheated of a lifetime with my gorgeous boy. But in some ways, I to say pride, I guess, is a funny word, I guess. But, you know, it's still great to know that he's, you know, his memory lives on, I guess.
Yeah. And I think that's the important thing. It's the legacy of all the children and the families that we support, that SIDS and Kids really try to push for changes in the emergency response to ensure that parents are given time with their little ones in the hospitals, to ensure that the safe sleeping messages are going out, to ensure that they're cared for in the best way possible.
When Alexandra died, how quickly was SIDS brought in for you?
Again, as I said, it's all sort of, the early days are just a blur, but I think it was probably the next day that SIDS, and don't forget it was New Year's Day too, so
I was probably... How did it come to your awareness? Did they come to you? Or
I've got a fairly resourceful sister, so I think she had made contact with them as well, but also through the social worker at the hospital that Alex was taken
to
by ambulance as well. There is very much a system in place, so they made contact with us. Because Alex died in our house, we actually couldn't go home. Particularly my husband couldn't face our house for about 3 months afterwards. So there's lots of things that that I guess we don't always think about, but so we were actually living at my sister's, and our counsellor Kevin came to her home there about 2 days after he'd passed away to help us with funeral arrangements and to give us some booklets that Jill mentioned earlier, and also to explain the coroner's process. I didn't even know where my baby was. And everyone has to have a there's a coroner's process with every child's death under two. So I guess explaining why that was necessary, and to know that they were doing that because they were hoping to find, I guess, something that may explain what had happened too. So he was great in that, and the fact that he also attended Alex's funeral made it so more personal.
Wow.
So it is very much that connection when Jill, and what they do with the limited resources that they have is just really amazing.
One of the roles that we have is to work, and we work very closely with all the emergency responders, and in Victoria it's quite unique because you think of a little one has died, and if the little one has died at home, the paramedics, your house becomes full. You've got the paramedics there. The police have to attend. And for the police, it's hard.
Well,
and for the parents, it's hard seeing them come through the door.
It's not nice to talk about, but this early age of a child has a tremendous impact on the mother as well. And sadly, there are some mothers that don't handle that new scenario very well. And so it's understandable that the police are very much involved.
Absolutely. Yeah. There has to be a protocol, and the protocol also, though, has to work well. So we do a lot of training with the police, with the paramedics, with the fireys in Victoria, etc. And we work very closely with all of those, as we should.
When we come back, we're going to explore
just exactly what Red Nose Day is on about this year and how you can assist.
And you're on Word for Word across Australia on Community Radio Network with Dean Beck and Joy Atwell.
Jill Green from Sith for Kids and Leanne Fink are with us, and they're talking about Red Nose Day coming up on the 24th of June. Jill, SIDS is a syndrome, but the organisation looks after any sudden infant death.
Absolutely. Our expanded service, we look after families where there's been a sudden and unexpected death, from 20 weeks gestation up to in Metro 6 years of age, Geelong, Ballarat 18, and that can include... It could include SIDS, it could include asthma attack, car accident, unluckily homicide, asthma attack, any sudden and unexpected death.
That's a lot of deaths.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I died from an asthma attack at 5.
In Australia, just infant deaths, there's 1,300 infant deaths in 2009.
1,300,
that's in Australia. That's just under 12 months of age. So each year, our the families that we support, and it's a lifelong association, we just don't give them support for the first week, for the first 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
It stays in your heart forever, and so should we support and walk by them forever.
Now, if you wondered what the cost of saving a child's life is, according to the SIDS and Kids website, it's $2,266, which... It's not a lot of money to save a life. How do we get that figure? There's been $16 million that has been invested into research and health promotion to date. And simply from the Safe Sleeping Program alone, 7,060 lives have been saved. That's extraordinary.
It is extraordinary. Just by simple infant care practices. And the main ones, sleep your baby on the back, no smoking, keep your baby's head uncovered. And also we talk about safe sleeping to prevent sleeping accidents as well. So make sure the environment's safe where you place the product. Make sure the cot is one that meets the Australian New Zealand standards.
The no smoking, that's during pregnancy, I take it, as well.
Absolutely.
As,
during pregnancy, yeah. And afterwards as well. In a perfect world, we'd get everybody to stop completely.
Joy, how long have been humans been having babies? It's a while now, isn't it?
Genesis 1 verse...
Well, how come we hadn't worked all of this out beforehand?
It's very simple, isn't it?
And these are not drugs. This is just technique.
Well, we don't know the cause, so this is all we've got to work on. And we do know, and that's been the beauty of the public health campaign, that we make it broadly. Let's sleep every little infant safely to try and reduce the risk of SIDS and sleeping accidents. But let's get into the research too about stillbirth as well. That's another area we have to go into.
But as you say, we've got new parents coming along that haven't heard the message.
Mm.
And it's really important that you get funding so you can continue to get that message out there.
We need funding just to put our brochures out. Every parent gets a brochure, antenatal classes in the hospital, when they go home by maternal child health nurses. And we do training for all those professionals as well. We need funding just to publish, print those brochures, and
see,
that's a lot.
You just thought, thought it was about a silly red nose or a funny looking pen.
So much more. Mm.
So much more.
So much more.
So much more.
How can we all assist with this? I mean, you can make a donation through your website at any point in time, but in this awareness phase of the lead up to Red Nose Day on the 24th of June, how can we help?
Well, I think donating for Red Nose Day, specifically when we're talking about it this time of year, but also raffles during the year. And you can do it through our website, and I think you've got that there.
Rednoseday.com.au is the website. And you'll also find information on that about a special service, Joy.
Yes, on this coming Friday, the 24th, at St Michael's Collins Street in the city, there is a special service for anyone who's been affected.
Mm. But only for Catholic, is that right?
It's actually a uniting church.
But I knew she'd get me.
But it's all denominations or no denomination.
So it's non-denominational
everyone.
At all.
Yes.
And for me as a bereaved parent, it is a great opportunity to go along and to take time out of our busy world and to remember the gorgeous little babies that have been lost along the way and to have that time to remember and
grieve. To meet other parents.
Yep.
Sure. To see that some are smiling now, they bring their new children. It's a lovely time. We also have the choir singing there. We have a group of parents that we have an amazing lady, Sandra, who formed the choir, and it's made up of parents where their child has died from different causes. And just listening to their singing, they've come to an amazing place now with their singing. So they'll be performing there as well.
So if you've never actually contacted someone but lost a child, come along to the service. And there'll be counsellors, I imagine, there.
Absolutely.
For people to connect with, other parents.
And morning teas afterwards. So there's an very opportunity important. Just to meet and have a chat.
And I imagine, Leanne, it's good to have an annual purge.
It is. Absolutely.
Lots of tissues?
Yes, lots of tissues.
Because lots of beautiful songs to cry to.
Yeah, and it really is a beautiful service. Mm. And I guess that's another thing that's important about the work that SIDS and GIDS do is that it's not just for the first couple of weeks. You can engage or re-engage, reconnect along the way.
Like Jill said, it's actually for life.
It is.
That you're there for people for life.
Yeah.
And I think also, if I may say, we have a 24-hour line, and this line is open for any families and their extended families if they need support. We're there 24 hours a day.
Jill mentioned earlier the early days where people bring casseroles around and your family are there. And, you know, that support is great. But, you know, a week or two down the track, people re-engage with their own busy lives and you're left to flounder. And I guess SIDS are there for you at that time. And, you know, remember that. So that's when you're looking for help.
And as Jill mentioned, that special hotline is
1300 308 307. That's 1300 308 307.
And whether it's a giant foam red nose or a plushy toy or a very nice looking tax deductible Diamante lapel pin, there are pens, there are stress balls, there are awareness bracelets, doesn't matter what it is. Oh, even an iPhone cover. Red Nose Day has something for you. So if you see it in any of the outlets, make sure you buy something this year because it is important, the wonderful work that SIDS and Kids do to rebuild lives.
Thank you, ladies. Thank you, Leanne, for sharing that story. That's absolutely amazing. And Jill, thank you very much. And to the politicians out there, we often say this, come on, guys, come up with some funding. Important work.
Red Nose Day is Friday, the 24th of June. Make sure you support it. And check out more information at rednoseday.com.au. Leanne and Jill, thank you so much.
Thank you for the opportunity. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
There will be a podcast and a transcript of this interview available for download from Joy's website, joy.org.au. And if you would like to correspond with the program, please email wordforword@joy.org.au. I'm Dean Beck.
I'm Joy Etwell.
Till next time, you take care and bye for now.
Word for Word is produced by Robert Briley from Australia's first gay and lesbian radio station, Melbourne's Joy 94.9. Word for Word is made possible thanks to funding provided by the Community Broadcasting Foundation and is distributed nationally to over 70 radio stations in the Community Radio Network.
Service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.